What's positive all this?
Woo! Put Scooter on the phone, you bird brain.
What do you do, backflips? You jump up there in a silly suit? What do you do?
You go, bam! I want you to play that.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Fast Freddy here, back at home at the Youngstown studio with my man Joe Danier, and it's good to be back. We haven't had a podcast here for a while, and I got a lot of good guests coming up here soon, and we're trying to get back on track, but our schedules have been a little crazy here, and we are definitely looking forward to getting back to a lot of stuff. I got a lot of good people that want to come on, and it's just a matter of figuring things out here and getting it going. But it is definitely good to be back. Oh, here we go. So as soon as I walked in, Joe said, "What do you want to drink?"
And I said, "One bourbon, one beer."
It was just like the song. I said, "Well, what do you got?" He goes, "Well, we got some bourbon." And he said, "We got some beer and we got some coffee." And I said, "Yes, please." And I'm going to try one of each here this evening. Of course, Joe is the king of espresso. He's got an espresso maker here, and he has never made a bad cup. He's got the foam on there perfect, and it's just some great-tasting coffee. So my plan is to start off here with the espresso and get that going, and then maybe kick into the bourbon and then finish it off with the beer, or do I go to the beer next and finish it off with the bourbon?
I would say coffee, beer, finish off with bourbon.
Okay. And our beer today, of course, is from our friends at Penguin City Brewery here in Youngstown. And boy, are they expanding. Yes, they have it's not a brand new. They took the William B. Pollock, the old mill, and they refurbished it, and it is looking great. I was by there today. Beautiful. A lot of construction going on. Big mural painted on the front and everything. It's looking good, and it's a good taste in beer too. Yeah. So Penguin City, shout out. And then a little later on, we will be indulging in the Buffalo Trace Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. So what's the story behind this here?
The oldest bourbon manufacturer in the United States. We're talking like 1800s. They've been doing this.
The ancient paths of countless buffalo led America westward. Legendary explorers, pioneers, and settlers alike follow these trails, known as traces, through the rough wilderness to new lands, new adventures, and newfound freedom. So that's what I'm going to get from this.
Totally. Have you been watching Yellowstone, by the way?
No, you know what? I have got to be the biggest dummy in the world. I have never seen a single episode of Yellowstone.
Well, this will get you watching. You drink this and you're going to be wanting to go kill some buffaloes and hit the west.
And people. Yes, now, from what I understand, it's like the Sopranos only out west. That's what it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Big landowner defending their property, going up against the man. It's just awesome.
I'll have to check it out. But I have never seen that. And you know what? Another show I've never seen is You Better Call Saul. I see they have like, the season finale of Better Call Saul and all this stuff. I have never seen that show.
Did you watch Breaking Bad?
No.
Got to watch Breaking Bad and then watch so because they're connected.
Right. I do know that.
Yes.
But, you know, and it's not because I have some kind of, I don't watch TV or whatever. It's just, I have such a crazy schedule. I'm never really around anywhere where I have, you know, like some people binge watch a show.
Well, if you pick shows that you basically have like 97 seasons to get caught up on, you could watch for an entire month and still not be caught up with everybody. So good luck on that one.
You know what I watch? I watch short little clips on YouTube. That's what I watch. You know, like I watch Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Right.
And I'll sit there and I might watch 15 little short clips. Or I might watch 15 little short clips of Family Guy. But my addiction, and I think we talked about this maybe on our last podcast, is these stupid reels videos on Instagram.
Yep.
And these things are like the crack cocaine of social media. I watch those things ad nauseum. They're so easy to watch because, you know, you got one thing after another. You'll have a Family Guy episode. And then, who's that one comedian is always on there? Jim Gaffigan. Jim Gaffigan is on there all the time, and he's always funny. And it's just like two quick jokes, and then it moves on to something else. I think that's my attention span. I can't watch. I can't sit and binge watch,
an hour, not for
and
you.
I can't do that. You know, and then there'll be a Family Guy, and then you'll see a fight in the hood. And then they got this guy. Have you seen the one guy on there that's the arm wrestling champion?
Yes.
This guy is bad to the bone, and he beats everybody, and he's got this voice, and the women just love his voice. And he's like arm wrestling these guys, and he'll be like, yeah, that's it. Take it easy now.
Very well.
Yeah. Move in. Move your hips a little bit. And these women just love it. And this guy isn't that big. And all these Marines and bikers and everything give him a try, and they can't beat him. He's got like this perfect secret technique, and nobody can beat this guy.
How about those professional slap fights?
Oh, yeah. Those are always good. You see those.
Slow motion.
Yeah. And then you have the different encounters with, street fights and, people, like in the hood or whatever, just getting in these stupid fights over stupid shit. And I end up watching that for a while, but it just keeps going.
Well, and here's the thing, the algorithms are good. Whatever you spend like a minute looking on, it gives you more of that. So you gotta be real careful with what catches your interest, because you'll get inundated with it. And I say that wink, wink,
Yeah, no. And the guitar players, players on there, or certain bands will come up. And to me, that's just like a comfortable thing to watch.
For sure.
I watch that all the time. I could watch that, because, I saw the Family Guy. I saw this. Keep it moving, man.
That's it, right?
That's why I'm fast, Freddy. Keep it moving. Keep it moving. Let's go. Let's go. Another one. Come on. Hey. You know which one really gets me, though? And obviously, I spend too much time on this, and I get bombarded with this. Did you ever see the one with Family Guy, and it's Hank Hill, and he's singing, how do I know what a JPEG is? I just want a picture of a god dang hot dog, hot dog, hot dog. And people have this, and it has like this disco beat.
And they put all kind of memes to that. Right?
And it's all like, they'll have pictures of their dogs, and it'll be like 10, 12 JPEGs of their dog in different positions.
Yep.
And they just keep rolling.
Yep.
And I'll tell you what, you get stuck on that, and then you get like, after about the 12th time you're hearing it, you're just going crazy.
What am I doing? I was a smart guy before today.
Yeah. How do I know what a JPEG is? I just want a picture of a dang old hot dog. Hot dog. Hot dog. It's just like, why am I watching this stuff? And I'm just kind of like crazy on that kind of stuff. I don't know why. Well, it's easy. Yeah, because I just sit there on my phone. Okay, next. And I just...
Well, you nailed it. It's the cocaine of social media.
Oh,
you get endorphins. You get all of those chemicals.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And it's always something. And then they used to have this one Oriental woman on there who had this crazy accent. And she would always say crazy stuff. And she had her little dad there. And she was dating this other guy. And she would go off on him and stuff. And her thing was, she would kick her shoe off and catch it and throw it at the guy. And she would always, and she would like mispronounce words and stuff. And it was, I haven't seen them on there lately, but and then the Great. Dancing ones, you got some sexy women on there dancing. And what's that one? I got a pretty face, big bank or something. Pretty face, little waist, big bank. And they hop around, and they show their ass and these tight pants and stuff.
And what's cool about it is everyday people can get on there and do entertaining things. Like, there's some people that would have never got the spotlight, but are funny as hell,
Yes. And some of these people are making big money on that stuff.
Yeah.
You get to be these influencers. Well, how about that one, the Cash Me Out girl, Cash Me Outside, that was on Dr. Phil, and she was a little son of a bitch. And she was on Dr. Phil. And now, like recently, I saw she paid cash for like a $6 million house in Miami or something.
Cashing in, baby.
It's like, how do these people get that way?
I know.
I'm waiting. I throw some stuff up there here and there, but none of my stuff's catching yet. But it will.
Well, the girl that sells her farts, and the couple girls that sell underwear, and they're making $50,000 a month doing stuff like that.
It's crazy. Hey, we got a thumbs up on the Buffalo Trace bourbon. Jay Bird says great bourbon, not just good bourbon, great bourbon.
All right.
And Jay's one of my riding buddies, and He wants to go on the bourbon tour. I guess down in Kentucky, they have the bourbon tour.
Yes, they do.
And you
do.
Just go from like Jim Beam to Jack Daniels to each one, and you go and check them all out.
Yeah, I was in Tennessee and Kentucky this last road trip. I did more hiking than I did checking out bourbon distilleries. Stuff.
Yeah, you're
or
with the family and everything.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But it's not cheap. Like when I looked at some of the prices on some of those bourbon trails, I mean, you could pay up to 10 grand to do these trips to the sipping on bourbon. It's spicy. Wow.
Yep. Yeah. They have a big rock festival coming up down in Louisville too in September. And it has something to do with bourbon, but the lineup is just, could you look that up? Let's see what the bourbon concert is. I think it's like Pearl Jam and a whole lot of these. Bourbon Con. Okay. No, that's not it. Bourbon and Beyond, Louisville, Kentucky, September 15th, 16th, 17th, and 18th.
Oops, I was just and, there.
I want to see what the lineup on this thing is just like amazing. Cool. So on, you got Jack White, Kings of Leon, Pearl Jam, Alanis Morissette, Chris Stapleton, Brandi Carlile, who cares? Greta Van Fleet, the Doobie Brothers, some of these other bands. I don't really know. Lucas Nelson and his band. That's Willie Nelson's son. Let's see, you know, these here are like Mike Campbell and the Dirty Knobs. I had a chance to see them. I'm going to talk about them in a little bit. Jimmy Vaughn, great blues man, Stevie Ray Vaughan's brother. And, you know, some of these other bands, you know, these newer up and coming indie bands, Eric Gales,
looks like different styles of,
music. It's Eric Gales. He's a blues man. He's been around a long time. He's actually kind of a young guy, but he's been around forever. And I remember one time when he was first coming up, I was at this DJ convention in New York City, and we were at, what is the name of that place? I think it's called the Roadhouse. And he was playing there, and they were just these small showcases, like little private shows and everything. And all the drinks were covered and everything. And I'm sitting right up in front, and Eric Gales is on stage. And I mean, he does the Jimi Hendrix stuff and everything. So I'm sitting up there, and next thing you know, he hands me his guitar.
Oh, no way.
And so I start playing his guitar with my teeth.
Whoa.
And everybody went nuts. You know, of course it was just a bunch of noise and gibberish, but it was like, but Eric Gales, man, he's tough. And as a matter of fact, we're going to talk a little bit about the blues scene in general, because I'm going to play back my interview I did a couple weeks ago with Kenny Wayne Shepherd, who's a great blues man. And he's like a younger guy. He's been around since he was like 16, and he's on his 25th anniversary tour. And it's like, wow. You look at this guy, and I mean, he's played with a ton of different people, and Stevie Ray Vaughan and everybody. And we had a good conversation. So we're going to share that conversation tonight coming up here in a little bit. But, Mike Campbell and the Dirty Knobs. Mike Campbell is the guitar player for Tom Petty. He was Tom Petty's right-hand man. You know, he helped him write all those songs together and all that stuff. And he is just like one of the coolest, most laid-back cats out there. And through the pandemic, he was doing daily songs, and he would do a little like daily live thing or give guitar tips and all this stuff. And it was just fantastic. And the guy was just so cool. So when he was in Chicago, I went on another Amtrak jaunt to go see him in Chicago, which was a lot of fun. And I'll talk about that a little bit too, if we got some time. But Mike Campbell and the Dirty Knobs, if you're a Tom Petty fan, look him up. He is really, really good. And he, when Lindsey Buckingham, this last Fleetwood Mac tour, when they fired Lindsey Buckingham again, he filled in for him on guitar and did a great job. Fantastic job. He wrote the music for Boys of Summer for Don Henley. He produced Bruce Springsteen's wife, Patty's album. He's just worked with so many people, and he is just so cool. And he is just so laid back, and he is just such a great guy. And I really hope that this Dirty Knobs takes off, because, you know, it's got that Tom Petty vibe. Well, of course, he did the guitar work. He's a lead guitar player on there, but he is really good. He's it's definitely a show you'd want to see. So Anyways, maybe we got to go down to Bourbon and Beyond in Louisville in September. That would be a lot of fun. All right, let's see here. Speaking of the blues, Tracy Randall checking in. And Tracy has been doing some blues shows with the Dash Inn. And, oh, you remember we had Barat. What the heck was his first name? I can't think of it right now. But the harmonica player. And we're having him back. Are you ready for this? We're going to do harmonica lessons.
Seriously?
He's going to come in and people could call in and maybe they want to learn, improve their technique and stuff. He's going to teach me how to play and show us everybody some tricks. I think it's going to be really good. Sweet. So we got that coming up here soon. He just was in touch with me the other day. And then let's see who else is checking in. Barb Cerny. All right, Barb from the South Side. I think Barb stood me up on St. Patty's Day. I got to talk to her the next time I see her. Christopher checking in. Stormy, what's up, man? Stormy, that's my guy, man. I haven't seen Stormy for a while, and he's always out at the bike stuff and everything. I'm glad he's doing well. Devin, what's going on, man? Yeah, he sent me a friend request. I am still at 5,000. I'm stuck. I'm stuck at 5,000.
Make a political statement and they'll disappear, man. Yeah. That's all you gotta do.
I know how to get rid of people.
Trump's awesome. And then boom.
No, zero. There's none of that on it. That's why I've probably had 5,000 people since day one that I started. And, you know, and I wanted to change and make it a fan page, but I got too much interaction and stuff going on, and I'm just happy with the way it is. So, and I got like a waiting list of thousands to get on, but it's like I don't want to. You know, there's certain things with like the fan page that you can't do and that I'm not, and I just kind of like the way it's going. I hate to jinx it or whatever, you know? So it's like, we'll get you on. You can follow me. You can still follow me, but, let's see here. Who else is checking in here? Yeah, that's about it. Tracy Randall. Oh yeah. She's got these blue shows going, at the, Dash Inn. Mm-hmm. And I think she has one coming up. It's next week, if I'm not mistaken, and Haas and the Juggernauts. And Haas and the Juggernauts are just really, really good. And they haven't played too many gigs, so I think that's going to be a big night at the Dash Inn. So, I can't wait to get back up there, man. I was at that last show, and man, did I have a blast. Good time. And the band sounded good. So, you know, the blues scene is kind of crazy. You know, right now, the blues scene is almost kind of like this underground thing that the people that really like guitar playing and stuff, the people that are in the classic rock and grew up with that, and they're looking for something else and they're looking for something new, the blues scene is sucking them in, because a lot of these guys, it's a fine line between blues and blues rock, you know? Right. And a lot of these guys are blurring the lines, and there are so many talented people out there. Like at the Robbins Theater recently, they had Devin Allman, who's Dwayne Allman's son, or Greg Allman's son, and Samantha Fish, who's this female, awesome chick guitar player. And the whole scene is really good. Guys like Eric Gales and guys like Devin Allman. And some of these bands kind of blur the lines, you know, between blues and what they call now Americana, which is maybe a little country twang in there, but then they jump into some blues and then they play like straight out rock and roll. And so, I mean, it's really a vibrant scene, but it's still like kind of underground because it doesn't get a lot of play on the radio. Well,
why is it? Like ever since COVID came back, two things I noticed a lot more was a bunch more activity in like jazz and jazz clubs, and blues the same thing. Yeah. Like, but it's got to be connected to something in pop culture, that a movie, a show or something that got
people. Nothing.
No,
that's the beauty of it. It's just this underground.
It's just happening on its own.
It's just this movement that's going on, and it's a natural thing. And that's what I dig about the whole thing. You know, there's these people out there, some of the other performers like Anna Popovic, and the Tedeschi Trucks Band, you know, who, you know, Derek Trucks was, you know, slide guitar player for the Allman Brothers, and Government Mule with Warren Haynes, who was also a member of the Allman Brothers. And these guys are such seasoned, accomplished musicians, and the people that are in on it, they know about it. Right. But other people, I think they get maybe a little scared or a little frightened off. But like that Devin Allman, Samantha Fish show, it was a great crowd and the show rocked. And then the same here with Kenny Wayne Shepherd last week or the week before. It was another one of those shows that it was just fantastic. And I think it's slowly catching on, but it's doing it without the hype, without people trying to do it. You know, it's not like, you know, I think it would spoil it if more people try to change into and be a part of it by doing it. Right. You know, I think the big part of the appeal is it's natural. It's these people have the love for the music and the fans have the love for this music.
And you have people like Tracy who give them a place to play.
Right. And, you know, I mean, you go to some of these blues festivals, I think they're getting bigger, you know, as some of these bands get more popular. But I think some of the people just like it just the way it is. You know, it's kind of like, hey, this is our thing we got going here, and we don't need everybody and their brother jumping on here and trying to capitalize and everything. You know, these bands play the smaller places. They play the bars. They play the clubs, but they have a following, and the people that are into this music, they really dig it, and they're huge music fans. So, you know, it's not just like, you know, I kind of like it or whatever.
Right. Well, that's cool. The people that
like it are really, really into it. And that's what even makes the scene a little cooler. And, you know, it's all based on the blues. And then there are some bands that I say venture into Americana, which is, you know, like I said earlier, it's a mixture of rock and roll and roots rock and roll, and has a little country tinge in there, and then they could just get blues or straight out rock, but it's all original and it's based on that. So, you know, I looked at this the other day. I was thinking about that. I was watching Samantha Fish, and I'm thinking about, like, you know, these Cardi B's and stuff of the world, and these rap chicks that have to go out there and look like strippers and have the dirtiest, filthiest language. Yeah. And I'm no prude. I get it. Yeah. I know why people like it. Don't get me wrong. I see why people like it. Yeah. You know, I see the appeal to it. Don't get me wrong, but it's like when you see some of these other women out there that are sexy, they're sultry, but they're so talented and they're all great guitar players. Samantha Fish, Susan Tedeschi, Lucinda Williams, Anna Popovic, Sue Foley, all these great blues players. And I mean, like, and they don't have to resort to that because they are just so super talented. They play that guitar. I mean, you know, they might have a short skirt on and high leather boots or tight leather pants and stuff, but that's far from what it's about. You know, it's far from what it's about. It's like all talent and it's charisma. That's right. And it's real talent to me anyway. It's not somebody, you know, rapping dirty about their wet body parts,
right?
You know, well,
so who, as a kid, who was your first like female musician or, you know, star that you kind of got a little crushed on?
Well, that would probably be, you know, back in the day, you know, the Brady Bunch.
Okay.
The Partridge Family, Susan Day, and, you know, whoever was on the Brady Bunch. And, you know, mostly people that were on TV shows back then.
What about musicians?
And then the musicians, that started later, you know, probably like Stevie Nicks and Hart and you know, then Linda Ronstadt, and then you probably went from there, you know. But like I say, the early ones were more of the teeny bopper, little kid, TV show type stuff, you know.
Grace Slick was mine.
Grace Slick.
Her freaking voice.
Grace Slick and Janis Joplin. I don't know. They seemed a little too rough for me. I think I was out of there. You know? I was out of their range. Well, why don't, you know, since we're talking about the blues here, why don't we play this little conversation I had with Kenny Wayne Shepherd? And I think we even touch a little bit about, you know, the blues scene and some of the stuff that we were talking about. But Kenny Wayne Shepherd definitely rocked the Robbins Theater. And speaking of blues, they got Buddy Guy coming there on May 20th. And, you know, Buddy, he's like 80 years old, but he's still out there doing it, man. So here's my conversation with Kenny Wayne Shepherd. And then we'll be back with more. I'm going to finish my coffee. Then we're going to try the Buffalo Trace. We got a Penguin City sitting here. So I got stuff to take care of. So anyways, here's our conversation with Kenny Wayne Shepherd. 3, Youngstown's Classic Rock. Fast Freddy here, and my guest this afternoon is bluesman Kenny Wayne Shepherd. It's hard to believe that Kenny Wayne Shepherd is out on tour on his 25th anniversary. Kenny, that's amazing, man.
Yeah, man, we're really excited. You know, it's hard to believe that 25 years has passed since we put out our second album, Trouble Is. Such a monumental record for us, but one of the great things about, you know, being here 25 years later is that we're still playing shows. The fans are still showing up. We're playing the album in its entirety and the show for the very first time ever. And the music still sounds as relevant today as it did when we put it out 25 years ago.
Absolutely. Now, I don't know if you remember this or not, but when you guys first came out, you stopped by our radio station when we were in a blue cement block building back in the woods in Youngstown, and you and Noah came in and you did Blue on Black acoustic on the air live just when it came out, and you just absolutely blew everybody away.
Yeah, thanks, man. You know, we did that. We kind of made the rounds and did a lot of acoustic versions of that song. Thankfully, it kind of lends itself to that kind of a performance. But, you know, those were the good old days, man. You know, going around to every radio station that's playing your record and meeting everybody and saying thank you and doing on-air performances. That stuff's a lot of fun.
Now, where did Blue on Black come about? How did that song come about?
Well, you know, we were writing songs in preparation for the second album, and, you know, I had this music that I had put together, and I presented it to Mark Selby and Tia Sillers, who are a couple of my songwriting partners, and Tia kind of honed in on this T-shirt it was a long-sleeve shirt that I was wearing that was blue and black, and she just really kind of took that as an inspiration and ran with it. You know, she realized that, you know, putting blue and black together, if you mix those two colors together, it really, the black consumes the blue and it really doesn't have much of an effect. And so she just took that idea and ran with it and created the chorus. And then we built the rest of the song around that.
And you know what I really like about that song? And I think one of the things that really separates that song is the tempo. How did you decide on that tempo for that song?
Well, that's actually just my natural, you know, that's my natural meter. You know, it's like when I write this music for these songs, it's really just, you know, that's the tempo that feels natural to me for that song. And so that's what it was.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, how did you get started in music? Who were some of your early influences? When did you pick up a guitar? What made you want to do it? How did you get the whole ball rolling?
Well, my dad was in radio and he was a disc jockey. I am as a musician. I got my first real electric guitar at age 7. I had already kind of learned some notes on these little toy acoustic guitars prior to that, but got my first real electric guitar at age 7 and just started really woodshedding and putting in the time and the practice. And by 13, I was, you know, sitting in with people on stage and making my first demo recording.
That is pretty crazy. What was the first song that you learned how to play?
I don't know. People ask me that. I really have no idea, to be honest with you. I can't remember that. I do remember like being like 4 years old and having this little toy acoustic and figuring out the notes, the smoke on the water, and having this realization like, wow, I've heard that before. That's an actual song.
Right.
And I can play those notes, you know?
Yeah. A lot of people got started on that one, huh? Anybody that ever picked up a guitar, thank God for Smoke on the Water. It probably at least inspired people to say, wow, I'm making something that I actually know what that is, you know?
Yeah. It's a lot cooler than Mary Had a Little Lamb. You know?
Right. And so then when did you really make your first performance where you felt like, man, you know, where you tasted blood and you were like, hey, this is something cool. And this is I'm on my way here, you know, or this is something I want to do.
Well, yeah, that was when I got on stage for the first time. I sat in with this blues musician down in New Orleans named Brian Lee, and he let me get up and play with his band, and I was supposed to do, you know, 2 songs. I had never really been on stage in front of people before, and I kind of knew that was a defining moment for me. I was like, I'm either going to crash and burn, or, you know, I'm going to do okay, and, you know, but if I crash and burn, I'm never doing this again. And I got up there and got the very first standing ovation of my life, and instead of playing 2 songs, he kept me up on stage for the rest of the night. And, you know, that was really what kind of gave me the confidence to move forward.
Yeah. From there, then you were off to the races then.
yeah, I mean, you know, soon after that, we went in the studio, recorded my first demo recordings. I formed my own band the next year and started doing gigs with my own band. And by the age of 16, signed my record deal.
That is really awesome, man. Yeah, so even though you've been in this 25 years, you're kind of a relatively young man for this, you know, because, 25 years and you started pretty young. So you got a lot of miles left on this thing.
Well, I hope so. You know, I mean, certainly the kind of music that we do, just real authentic, blues and rock and roll. It's kind of a timeless genre of music. So, never really kind of goes out of style if you do it well. And most of my heroes have had lifelong careers doing this kind of music. So hopefully, the fans stick with us and, we can ride this thing until the wheels fall off.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, the Stones have been doing it and Aerosmith and everybody else. So why not Kenny Wayne Shepherd, right?
That's right, man.
So, let's talk a little bit about the blues scene, because I'm a big blues fan and I think the blues scene for a lot of people is probably one of the best kept secrets out there. There are so many talented people that are playing the blues scene these days that it's amazing. It's like, this is where all the guitar players are. This is where like all the real music is. You know, you got guys like you and Eric Gales and Devin Allman and Samantha Fish and, the list goes on, Tedeschi Trucks. Well, tell me a little bit about your take on the whole blues scene.
Well, I mean, a lot of different bands and genres get kind of lumped into the blues category, for better or for worse, really. I mean, to me, a lot of times it's like they call it blues because it's kind of like everybody's at a loss as to what else to call it. I think, the term Americana has been, thrown around lately. And, that's kind of a term used for, all American music that is influenced by a lot of different genres. And, I think some of the people you've mentioned, we all kind of fall into that category as well. But I mean, look, there's a thriving blues scene. There's a lot of great young artists playing this kind of music, whatever you want to call it. And, the thing is there's just not as much of a home for it on the radio waves as there used to be. But there's other ways to get your music out, through social media and stuff like that. So, I mean, the reality is that the blues is really the foundation of all popular music. If you trace any kind of popular music back to its origin, to its original source, you're inevitably going to find your way back to the blues. So, a lot of people start there. Some people start with the blues and move on into different directions. And some people make a lifelong career out of it. But there's no shortage of interest and no shortage of up and coming talent, for sure.
Right, right. Now, who were some of the people that took you under their wing early on in your career?
Well, I mean, everybody really embraced me from the beginning, for the most part. I mean, at least the really successful people, the people that really had nothing, felt like they had nothing to prove and had no reason to be intimidated by anything. They were always extremely encouraging and welcoming. I mean, B.B. King was like, another father to me. And, Bob Dylan was incredibly gracious and encouraging to me. And,
really?
Everybody, Eddie Van Halen. I mean, just about every musician that I came in contact with that was well established was just extremely encouraging and welcoming to me. And, it's just been my experience, really.
That's pretty cool. Now, how did you meet up with Bob?
Well, we toured with him like two different times. I did a tour with him when I was doing my first album in 1995, 96. And then we did another tour 97, 98 with him as well.
Oh, that is really cool. That is really cool. I'm a huge Bob fan. I've probably seen Bob more than I've seen a whole lot of other people. And I've seen a lot of concerts, and there's just something about Bob that, the mystique about him and just the songwriting talent, I would go see Bob any day of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. He's legendary for sure.
So he like talked to you and say, hey, man, you got to do this or you got to do that, or I like what you're doing, sticking that direction, or.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, he came out every day and watched me do my sound check, and then he would come and talk to me. He came up on my bus and would hang out on my tour bus and stuff with me. And, you know, I remember at the end of one of the tours, he told me, he said, "Hey, man, I don't care if you got a new record out or if you're just working up new material, you can come out on the road with me and open up for me anytime."
Wow. That is really high praise right there. That in itself, yeah. If that doesn't give you some sort of a motivation, I don't know what would do that. That's crazy.
Absolutely.
That's crazy. Absolutely. And then BB and Eddie Van Halen, I'm sure you're pretty broken up when Eddie passed away, when we lost Eddie. Boy, that was a huge loss there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I mean, he's like the Michael Jordan of guitar. You know what I'm saying? So it's like so many people influenced and touched by his music and his playing. And, you know, I knew him on a personal level. So, you know, it was a big loss for sure. And I mean, there's people obviously who were closer to him than I was, but I considered him to be a pretty good friend. And, you know, we did the very last Van Halen tour. We did that entire tour in 2015 with those guys. So, yeah, was, you know, I mean, I knew he had been sick for a while. So I think, you know, the inevitable was likely to happen, but still doesn't make it any less of a loss, you know?
Right, right, right. How about the best advice anybody gave you? Is there something that still sticks in your mind that, you know, you're with all these guys, you're rubbing shoulders and, you know, working with these guys. Is there one bit of advice that sticks in your mind, like 25 years later, that you still like keep as a motto or something like that?
Well, the thing that I do no matter what all the time is, you know, when Stevie Ray Vaughan signed my first Stratocaster for me, and he put a message on there that said, "Kenny, just play it with all your heart." And, you know, that's the one thing that no matter what I do, every time I pick up the guitar, every time I step on the stage, that's always in the back of my mind. And that's what I strive to do.
And I think you're doing it very well. Now, let me ask you this. When you see these guys like Bob Dylan, Eddie Van Halen, Stevie Ray Vaughan, B.B. King, is there a common denominator? Is there something that all these guys have in common that make them so great?
Well, I think everybody has a different thing that makes them great, you know, other than, you know, for me, those guys all just knew how to touch people through their instrument. You know, they didn't need words. All they needed was like a piece of wood and six strings on it. And they knew how to move people from the inside out. And that's remarkable.
That is awesome. We're talking with Kenny Wayne Shepherd. He is on his 25th anniversary tour already. Like we said at the beginning of the interview, when he stopped by the radio station 25 years ago to do Blue on Black acoustic, who would have knew that would be talking here 25 years later? Now, you've got a big show tonight down at the Robbins Theater in downtown Warren. And let me tell you, this is an awesome place to see a show. It's a great hall. It's a great room. And Kenny, what can people expect when they come out to the show tonight?
Well, tonight, first of all, the Robbins Theater is beautiful. I mean, I just kind of walked the venue and it's really impressive theater. So it seems like it is a really great place to see a show. But tonight we are going to be performing the entire Trouble Is album, you know, from start to finish, every song, which we've never done in the history of the band. We never played this record, every song on this record, in a live show before. So we're going to do that. And then we're going to go off the stage and we'll come back out for an encore, which is essentially almost like a second set, you know, sets worth of material, where we're playing some more recent material, stuff that we've recorded and been performing since we've done the Trouble Is record, because there's probably some people in the audience that maybe haven't seen us since we put the Trouble Is album out 25 years ago. And so we want to play some of the newer music and let them know what we've been up to.
That sounds great. Kenny Wayne, I can't wait to see you at the show tonight. I know it's going to be awesome. And congratulations on your first 25. And here's to another 25, 30, 40, 50 more years, man.
All right. Thanks very much.
Hey, there we go, man. Kenny Wayne Shepherd. Could you imagine that he was hanging out with Bob Dylan? Bob Dylan is like one of the most reclusive artists out there.
And I was just surprised that he said, yeah, Bob was hanging out on my bus and everything. You know who else is friends with Bob Dylan is Boom Boom Mancini.
Yeah.
Boom Boom used to spar with Bob.
Whoa.
I guess Bob has this gym in his house that's like better than any professional gym. And he's got all these big pictures of boxers and blues men all over the place. And he would go down there and Boom Boom would spar with him.
No kidding. That's
and every cool. once in a while, Boom Boom would give him a couple of good shots. And, you know, Bob would be like,
you think he'd take it easy on him for the most part, though?
Yeah, but he did. He said a couple times, I just want to let him know I was there, you know? And then Bob says, hey, take it easy. I still got a couple songs left in there, you know? And, but I mean, to spar with, Bob Dylan or to, you know, be on the road with Bob and just hang out with this guy. I mean, that's right. out there. And your other friends are Stevie Ray Vaughan, BB King, Eddie Van Halen. That's like,
it's good company.
You're like, whoa, dude. Hey, I finished my Penguin City beer during our interview and their motto is tough times don't last, but tough cities do. Now we're going to move on to the Buffalo Trace bourbon, but now you have this other bottle of bourbon sitting
yes.
here.
Unopened.
And this is called Bullet Bourbon?
Yes.
Or Bullet, or is it Bullet?
If we're going to go with Bullet.
Bullet. Bullet. Okay, yeah. Bullet Bourbon is what I call it. And let's see, this is bottled in Louisville, Kentucky as well. What is their little thing here? Used by making our family's high rye mash bill and pure Kentucky limestone filtered water. I think the limestone water has a lot to do with it because Jack Daniels, that's what they talk about too.
Yep.
Their charcoal mellowed barrels and their limestone water. So yep. I guess the limestone in the water.
It matters. It really does.
So now you were telling me on that TV show, Yellowstone, they started drinking that.
So yeah, in the background, whenever the main character, John Dutton, would pour some bourbon, it would be out of that bottle. So that bottle started popping up locally where people started drinking it because the guy from Yellowstone drank it.
Yeah. Okay. Now, James Minoski says that not bad, but not as good as the Buffalo Trace.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
I mean, you can't go wrong with it. I mean, it's one of those bourbons that, you know, like takes 8 years to age out. So not everybody can get in that game when you have to wait so long for the product to be ready.
And so once again, their thing is, let's see here. We're going to discover new lands. We're going to go through the rugged wilderness to new lands,
shoot a musket,
new adventures and newfound freedom. So I'm going to give Yeehaw. This a taste here. Yeah. That's what,
it's,
Jimmy said that we should have mixed this with the coffee.
You want another coffee? I mean, it's not too late.
You know what? Let's give it a try.
Okay. I'll give you a single espresso this time.
Okay. Then, yeah. We'll make a small one and I'm just going to sip on this while you do that. And then when you come back, we'll continue on. But yeah, this is Buffalo Trace bourbon. And I guess this is the good stuff. If James says it, if Jimmy says it, I'm going to go with him. And let's see here. Bullet is good. Yeah, let's see here. Yeah, man, maybe these guys want to go on that bourbon tour pretty bad.
Take the bike down there.
Right? Yeah, well, that's what the idea was. Boy, did we have a good ride this weekend. We went up to one of our basic rides. We went up to Cougar Bob's on 666 up on the other side of Tyonesta. Nice. And we had an excellent time. We had about 20 bikes. And boy, did we have such a good group of people. And anybody who wants to ride with us, you're always welcome too. You know, we always, you know, more the merrier. And
where do you bon voyage from? Where
we usually leave from Sheets on 46 or the Ice House or Truck World and Hubbard. We might make a couple stops and then take it from there. And then we went out to a place called the Garage in Jackson Center. And then from there, we went to Franklin, Pennsylvania, and we stopped at a place called the Office. And then we went up through Oil City and everything. And then we went up to Route 666. That's the funny thing that Cougar Bob's is on 666. And I went up there one time and it was closed. It had a detour sign. So my initial reaction was, oh, it must be being paved with good intentions. And so we went up to Cougar Bob's, which is an old schoolhouse, and it's like kind of a hunting and fishing place, and snowmobilers congregate there in the winter and stuff. It's a cool place. And they have this big moose hanging on the wall, and you're supposed to kiss the moose. And then we went up the street a little ways, this other place called the Flying W Ranch, which was a lot of fun. And then we came back, you know, about 300 miles all day long, and just a great time. We had a good bunch of riders. Hey, the Stretch Man is checking in. Dave Morton, the Stretch Man is checking in. You want to know if I got this from the Southside Soul Kitchen? I don't think they have that there. I think they... Okay, right. So how much do you think I should put? Well, first, let me taste it regularly.
Okay, yeah.
You know, this is my first shot of Buffalo Trace and
just
bourbon.
A regular shot in his glass there. So
yeah. So I'm not, but I'm going to, now do you just shoot these down or are you supposed to enjoy this?
Sipping.
Okay. I feel like I should have a cigar with this. You probably need a cigar to properly enjoy this bourbon the right way, I would think. So this isn't just pound down a shot and then go on to the next one.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And then it's not a shooter.
I don't open the bullet next, and then I just keep moving on. Oh, okay.
This should get interesting later.
Okay. I see. Yeah, maybe we'll have to start doing this from a cigar bar so we could have the cigar and the wood paneling on the wall, and we should be doing this show in leather chairs.
Yes, we should.
Big, comfy leather recliners.
Do you like cigars?
You know what? I do, but I don't. I enjoy them occasionally, but if I don't, I don't, you know. I like Macanudos. Those seem to be one of my favorites. That seems to be one of my go-tos. Now, like my brother-in-law, my sister's boyfriend, Cav, he always comes up with a good cigar. Hanging out with Cornell Bogdan, he'd always have a good cigar. He'd always have something, you know. But since I don't smoke them a lot, I go for the milder ones, you know, because if I smoke a really strong one, then I get a stomach ache sometimes after, you know. I think it's like, remember the cure in my day to get kids to stop smoking is your parents would like make you smoke a whole cigar or sit there and smoke a whole pack of cigarettes and puff them all down. I don't know if that ever really worked for anybody, but it just made them like it more. You know?
Right. Now, I've always loved the smell of cigars. I never had one, like Swisher Sweets or some stupid whatever. Yeah. But I went to Havana House for a podcast a couple weeks ago.
Oh, it has smelled great in there.
I had a real cigar. Oh, my goodness. It was amazing.
Yeah.
But like you, my lips started buzzing. So I let the cigar go out and I pretended to smoke it the rest of the way because it was a little bit much.
The one time Cornell had connections with the Havana, the Grand Havana in New York City. And it's on the, you know, 70th floor of this building or whatever, and you're overlooking the whole thing. Mm. And all these people got their own personal humidors, and they all have their name plaque on there. And you see, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger and Rudy Giuliani and Al Pacino and all these. Trump had one in there. It was like all these high rollers hang out there. And I don't know how we got in, but it was awesome. It was like one of those. You know, I'll probably never ever be back there again. But for the minute, man, boy, I was a big shot for an hour or two. And that's how it was, you know, in big comfy chairs and everything. And you'd have
how many deals have gone down in that
room?
Oh, you know?
Yeah. No doubt, you know. And then, like I say, you're up there on whatever the 40th floor, 50th floor, and you're just overlooking New York City at night. So cool. And, it was awesome. Unbelievable. Yeah, the Grand Havana in New York City. Yeah, if you're ever there, check it out. Tell them I sent you.
Can I go up there? Yeah. Is there tours?
Tell them I sent you. Tell them you know me. They'll get you right in.
Did I ever tell you my tour story?
No.
So I was on a road trip with my wife. We jumped in the convertible Mustang, and we went out to the East Coast.
Ooh.
And smooth, ain't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I do need a cigar.
Yeah.
I do need a cigar with that.
So I've always been fascinated.
Buffalo Trace, ladies and gentlemen.
There you go. I've always been fascinated with aerospace and airplanes.
Yeah.
And so I pull up to the gate of Langley Air Force Base, and I went up to the front, like, guard shack, and I stopped and said, is there a way we can get in and look around? Like, Langley, CIA headquarters, and they're going to let me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they didn't obviously let me, but I was an idiot thinking that they would.
Yeah, now James checking in here. Now, James, are you the chef? Now, I know one of Jay's sons is a chef, like – Big time chef. He's got something really big coming up. So James, is that you? I know I met you before, and I just want to make sure. Are you the chef or is that your other brother? So yes, James is the chef.
Okay.
And until it's final, he is working on something really, really big. A like amazing. He is ready to take a step into the big time.
Okay.
The huge big time. He's in the military and he is ready to go. I know his dad's really proud of him, and I'm proud to know him, because when he gets this new gig, it's going to be amazing. Okay. And I'll, you know, once it's all final and all right, I can say it.
We don't want to spoil it.
Yeah.
It early.
No. But I'll tell you what, if he tells me, he says 2-1 bourbon to espresso. Or wait a minute, let me see if I got that. 2-1 espresso to bourbon.
Okay, 2 espresso is the one bourbon.
Yeah. So
you're going to have to put it
about. And if James tells me this, because let me tell you something, he knows what he's talking about. I mean, what this guy does as far as culinary, he's in a different, when you see his old man, you're wondering how could that be, but right? Then you could probably say the same thing about my kids. So it's nothing. It's not a slight or anything. Hey, Elizabeth rolls in. How you doing, Elizabeth? As a matter of fact, I saw Elizabeth down at Kenny Wayne Shepherd. We had a good time down there. All right, we're going to go a little bit of. Yeah, see, at first I thought his old man, I thought Jay Bird said to put that in there. And I was just thinking, well, he'd put whiskey in anything. He'd put whiskey in anything, it don't matter, Yep. Mainly put it in yourself, let's give this a try here.
Okay.
And like I say,
that's about right. That's a good ratio.
Yeah. 2-1 espresso to bourbon.
Yeah.
So we'll give this a shot here, But yeah, when he finally gets this whole thing, and if it comes down, I'm gonna be proud to know this guy.
Nice,
Very
cool.
Oh man, Jimmy, you hit it right. You just want a little sip, yeah. Just taste that. Oh man, that is perfect.
Oh yeah. I think we got a new official drink here around.
Oh man. The Buffalo Trace and espresso. Yeah. You were right on the money there, man. You were right on the money. That's why he's probably going to get this. He's going to get this job that he's going
to
get.
Right. Yep. Now, does this drink have a name? Like you refer to this, you just say it's Buffalo Trace and espresso, or has it got a cool name?
Yeah. I don't know. All right, or maybe James, we should get it,
Maybe we should name it.
With Jim, where he's going, what he's got planned.
Okay.
If he names this drink, it's going to become a worldwide thing, Oh, no simple syrup. You need a little dab of, you don't have any simple syrup, do you?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Oh, no simple syrup. Mm. Oh boy. Okay.
We'll have to stock the bar.
Yeah. We're going to do the simple syrup next time. But anyways, boy, that really tastes good. That is like I'm a big advocate of coffee and alcohol mixed together. Remember, I made my own drink too.
The best.
Remember
the best
that?
I ever had.
This one here is probably a good one. Yeah, you know what, James, when you go on to your next endeavor, here's one you might want to share with your new people.
It is.
This is my favorite coffee drink.
Take notes at home, guys.
You get a can of that Pabst Blue Ribbon hard coffee. So you pour that in a glass, and then they have this Jägermeister cold brew coffee liqueur. I don't know if it's liqueur or whatever it is.
But
Jäger. Okay. So it's going to get you sloppy drunk, and you're going to do something you regret, but you're going to have a good time doing it at the time.
Yeehaw.
So anyways, so you get that, glass of Pabst Blue Ribbon hard coffee. Then you put in 2 shots of the Jäger cold brew coffee.
Yeah.
And then you get a shot of Bailey's and you put that on top of that and you stir that bad boy up. And let me tell you, you could drink that thing down in like 2 seconds.
So good.
Oh, it's really good. It's really good.
So good tasting.
Yeah. So that's my coffee drink. But I like the Irish Car Bomb. That's another one of my favorites. But that's Guinness, Bailey's, and Jameson. But that's still good
for the Irish Festival out at Magic Tree. What was your go-to?
Yeah, that was my go-to.
Was it really?
And Guinness. I like Guinness. You got to drink the Guinness. Oh, what else did they have? They had this other one. Oh, Roe and Co. Roe & Co. is another Irish whiskey that's out there.
Okay.
And Roe & Co. is pretty good. I think Guinness makes Roe & Co. And it's Roe & Company, and they just call it Roe & Co. But that was some pretty good stuff there too. So you got to get on the ball here, man. We don't have any simple syrup.
Yeah, I need guidance. I need somebody to tell me.
You know, how are you going to make a mojito if you don't have no simple idea. Syrup? You know, you need it for some of these drinks.
Give me bad Yelp reviews. And...
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty much just sugar and water, and you just mix it up. You know, you can make your own. You don't have to buy it, you know, but sometimes it's just easier.
Well, there was a time when Fred would come in here with coolers and beverages. We would
make margaritas and mojitos and everything. But now I have to work.
Right. You know? I drink coffee. Like old guys.
It was nice. it was really nice not working. I got to tell you, it really was. That year and a half was probably one of the best years of my life, honestly. But things are going good at Y103, okay. And I'm having a blast. I'm having fun. Sandra Miller, my partner in crime, is awesome. I got to get her on here one time. But, you know, she lives in Akron, and she's got 3 high school age kids. So you know what that's like.
Right.
You got some prom and this and that. And just being a referee with 3 kids. Now, see, and I give her credit because she has 3 kids. See, some people that have 1 kid, some people that have 2 kids, that ain't being a parent. When you got 3 kids, now you got all kinds of shit going down, man. Let me tell you.
You're the ringmaster.
You're a referee, you're a ringmaster. You know, it's you know, everybody, oh yeah, okay, I got 1 kid. Okay, Johnny. All right, I got 2. I got a boy and a girl. When you throw that 3rd one into the mix, buddy, forget it. You're off to the races now, man. And especially her, she's got 3 high school age kids.
Wow. She's in it.
Yeah. You know, and I mean, and when you get to that point, you got everything going on. You know, you got prom, you got dance lessons, and you got band, and you got Girl Scouts and selling Girl Scout cookies. And it's just like never ending. It's just like it just goes and goes and goes. And then, of course, you just got your everyday rigmarole that goes along with all that stuff, and you know what you need for a school project that you forgot, and how's come you didn't do your homework, and blah 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 blah. And you know, it's like some days you wonder, why do people even have kids? If it wasn't attached to sex, nobody would have a kid. nobody, I tell you.
But that's why Buffalo Trace was invented.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about. What is that? That's to get you through the rugged wilderness to new lands, new adventures, and newfound freedom.
And family since 1823.
Family. Let's put them all in a covered wagon and head west.
But then it was 18 kids that were loaded up in that wagon.
No. Hey, my friend Lizzie's checking in. How you doing, Lizzie? I'll probably run into Lizzie up at Geneva on the Lake this summer. Boy, I'm getting ready for that. I am getting ready for motorcycles and Geneva on the Lake and just everything. Because this weather, this damn weather will not change. It will not cooperate. We had 80 degrees the other day, and now we're back to a frost warning. Only in Ohio, you know, sunburn on Sunday and frostbite on Tuesday. I'm confused. I don't know whether to wear a stocking cap, a do-rag. I don't know whether to, you know, wear a heavy coat.
I'm an optimist. Here's what happened.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
So 85 degree day. The large mosquitoes said, oh, it's summertime. And then, boom, they got punched in the death throat. And now they're all dead, so there's no mosquitoes.
Oh, there boom. We go. Okay, that's optimistic. Yes. I might have to mention that on the radio tomorrow. Go. I might have to mention that. Hey, I'll tell you what, though, man. The Buffalo Trace and the espresso. Now if we just had that little dab of simple syrup to just put it over the top.
Just putting the screws to me for not having the necessities for drinking.
But even that right there.
That's good stuff.
It just, it really mixes perfect. It really mixes perfect. So, what else we got going on? Let's see. Oh, we were going to talk a little bit. Oh, you should see this thing. I know you're a nut about this and the social media and computers and algorithms and all that stuff.
Okay.
Last week, I saw this thing floating around Facebook. Okay. And it said, I fell asleep in my Foreigner t-shirt. And I woke up cold as ice. Keep it going. So I posted that and I made one comment and I said, I went to sleep in my George Thorogood t-shirt and I woke up bad to the bone.
Oh, nice.
This thing has taken on a life of its own. How this happened, I haven't a clue. This is actually going to mess up our numbers for our Facebook and everything. This thing ended up getting a reach of 80,000 people, 2,000 responses, and like,
wow,
hundreds of shares, and it's still going. It finally this week kind of slowed down, but it was like, so how do these things take off like that? What happens?
Well, that's like the gold. If you organic responses and engagement is everything. And so if you can put something that has that familiarity that people dive into, the algorithm sees that and says, ooh, something's super popular. And they give the red meat to what people are after. You nail that every once in a while. Like, you have to put it in the proper wave, like surfing, and then it rides for days.
Yeah, this went on for a week. I mean, even like the uppity ups at the, central command looked at that and they go, dude, you're like, this is a major win here.
Yeah, that's sweet.
I mean, this thing just, I couldn't even look at my phone because it would just be like response after response after response. And this thing just took off, and it's finally slowing down now, but it ended up with unbelievable.
In a world full of like shitty news, you gave someone some reprieve from that shittiness.
You know, I do think that I do have this down a lot, because the Y103 Facebook page, if you're not following that, get on there because we have a lot of good stuff. And that is one thing that I notice. And maybe I'm giving a hint here. You know, I could jump in on Tech Talk every once in a while. I mean, when I'm in Tech Talk, I'm too intimidated when you're around. You know, it's like there's nothing I could really say, with you around. It's like, okay, yeah.
Mr. Know-it-all's here is just going to say, yep.
those are the things that really take off. If you put original pictures on there, I mean, if you share something from, say, Channel 27's webpage, you might not get nothing on that. Or if we say, oh, hey, we got the 25K cash grab. Here it is, tune in. Here's the times, or, all this week, sign up to win this. That stuff doesn't get enough traction. You might, if you're lucky, 600-700 share, reach 800, right. They want you to boost that post. But if I put up a bunch of pictures from a bike run or something like that, you're going into the thousands.
Absolutely.
You're going into the thousands. And that's why sometimes you don't even want to waste your time on some of this other stuff anymore. So if you are in that position and you want to get those numbers up, or you want, people to, you want those posts to get out to a lot of people, especially pictures like that. Oh, I'll give you a good example of one that went crazy. The day before Easter, I'm making a ham. I'm going to glaze the ham, and I get out my brown sugar, which I've had for the past like 6 years. And this thing is just a solid brick. Okay. I post a picture of this brick of hard brown sugar. And I said, well, here it is. I've had the same thing. I'm going to have to go get a hammer and beat this off. Well, wait a
minute. No. Can we rephrase that? I'll give you a couple seconds. Let's go back.
Poor choice of words.
Here we go. We're going viral again, baby.
So I post that on there, and you would be amazed. Like, next thing you know, it's got like 300 responses. The reach goes to like off the charts, a couple thousand people. And it was just because of that. And it wasn't anything else. It's a lot of times these simple things that will get you these hits, or just a picture of whatever, a sunset or whatever. You'd be surprised on how those things get shared more, and how they let those things get out there.
Yeah. And it's a lightning strike too. People try to bottle that and figure out how to do it. Yeah. And it doesn't work that way. You know what I mean? You would have never predicted that one would have been the lightning strike.
Oh, when that thing went on. And like I say, when they saw that at work, and like, the upper management and stuff, and they're looking at it, they're going, dude, what a win. It's like, I'll take it, but I really had very little to do with it other than I posted it, and psh, away it goes.
Yep.
So, but if you're into that kind of stuff and that has to do with what you want to do, then that's something to look at, You know, that's something to keep in mind. The more original it is, the better chance you have of it getting shared. And
you have to
stuff
post
like
a lot because you do hundreds of posts.
Yes, yes. You have to post a lot. And once you get it going, as a matter of fact, Elon Musk offered to buy my Facebook page. Yeah.
How did he offer you?
$1 million for the Facebook
page.
That's
amazing. Yeah. And we didn't talk about Elon Musk. Yeah. So much has happened in these last couple weeks, right?
Yeah. You go down to Tesla and the next thing you know,
whispered in his ear. I was like, hey, that Twitter.
Yeah. How about getting that Twitter? So you're the guy responsible for that. And then I saw he made that comment and he's posted, and now I'm going to buy Coca-Cola and go back to putting cocaine in the formula. And then somebody being a joker put on there, Elon Musk says he's going to buy the Cleveland Browns and take them to the Super Bowl. And of course, all the smart ass Steelers fans out there are impossible. Yeah, impossible. They That's how most to. Of the Steelers fans talk anyways. Right. But yeah,
you know, I'm just thinking like I have to put a title on this show. Like after the shows, I have to put the podcast in title. Uh-huh. This one's going to be Fast Freddy Beats Off Brown Sugar. That's what it is. That's what it has to be.
You take that one thing. Yes. I've been here rattling on for hours. And then what do we get out of the show? Fast Freddy said he beat off brown sugar with a hammer. I make sure you put with a hammer.
With a hammer. Okay. Yeah. We need context.
But you see how things can get taken out of context so easy, and it Absolutely. Happens all the time.
All the time.
It happens all the time. Lori Mercer checking in. Hi, Lori. How are you? We'll be seeing Lori once bike nights get up and running here in a few weeks, man. If the weather holds out, you know, Ice House wants to start next Tuesday. I'll be over at Yankee Lake. The lube will be doing like they did last year, once a week at all three locations. They'll alternate the locations. So I know a lot of people will be saying, hey, could you come out to this? Could you come out? I am booked solid for the rest of the summer.
That's an awesome thing, though.
No, it's not. It's terrible.
Why?
Because I don't want to work. I don't want to go out there.
The man.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. But hey, let's move on here because we have another little interview clip I wanted to get to. Oh, what else were you going to talk about? Oh, TV shows. Or do you want to save that?
No, go for it.
Oh, since we're on our tech talk. Yeah, the tech talk segment of the show. Hey, my buddy Paul Mavrikas. Greek, where you been, man? I haven't heard from you from ages. Would it be, Blee? Good to hear from you. Paul Mavrikas is a guy that I've known since first grade. Can you believe that? You know,
childhood friend.
You know what? That's one thing I like. I have people that I see, you know, and talk to and everything that I've known from first grade. Me, him, Bonnie Hibbard's another one of our friends. And I mean, there's like a lot of people that I know that were friends from first grade at Bennett Elementary School. You know, I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. You know, even now you think, you know, I'm an old fart, and even people that I've been friends with from high school say, so now that's been forever, you know? And it's like, wow. And but it's still crazy. And you know what? You sit down and you talk to these people. It's like you don't even miss a beat. I mean, that's so crazy because you sit down and you just start talking like where you left off.
Isn't that crazy?
You know? Yeah, I think Bob Seger got that line in that song. See some old friends. It's good for the soul. That line really sticks in with me because I'll tell you what, if I run into my buddy Greek and we go down to Crickets or something, he comes into town. It's just like, man, it was so good to see you, and just sit there and chit chat for a little bit. And it's like, you just pick up right where you left off. You got all this history together and stuff. And it's just, there's still that bond there, you know, people from my old neighborhood or whatever. I see them and I sit there and I talk to them, you know, old employees from years ago, you know, I might not see them in person for 20 years. All of a sudden you run into them somewhere and it's just like
right back into,
you know. Like, you know, even like me and Casey, Chrissy Patrick, Cornell Bogdan, all those people, I don't see them all the time. And, you know, and we should probably be in touch and in communication a little more. But if I don't talk to them for a year or 2 years, and all of a sudden we run into, and it's just like, okay, yeah, we just pick up, whoops, spitting on the mic here. We just pick up from where you left off.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's what I love about this area is that we are tight with our relatives and our family, our neighborhood, yes, and community.
Yes.
I was talking to a lady who moved here from, I think it was Canada. Mm-hmm. And she said one of the hardest things to do is it seemed like that everybody already knew everyone else and they weren't. It was harder to like integrate because everybody knew everybody since first grade. You
right,
know?
Right, right, right. I mean, think about that. You know, I mean, we've been hanging out since first grade. You know, we went to the YMCA together and all through high school and college years and, you know, you know, it's crazy.
I love that about it.
And then, like I say, you know, we'll sit down. He'll come into town. He lives out in San Diego now, but, you know, he'll come into town and we'll hook up at like Crickets or someplace. And a couple other Southside derelicts will come in and right. We'll have the time of our lives, you know. And it'd just be like, okay, man, we just left the Hollywood Tavern at 3 o'clock in the morning, getting underage beer, 3-2 beer, and whatever year that
stories
was.
Stories for days.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jim Fergan watching there. There's a music guy right there, man. My man Jim Fergan, another Southside guy. He has the best mustache of all times. Jim has had this huge, huge mustache for as long as I have known him. And Jim, you know, we were talking a little earlier, you know, with Kenny Wayne Shepherd and the blues scene and everything. Jim is one of them guys that is tuned into that. He's okay. A ultra music fan. And, you know, he's one of them guys that really digs the music and gets into the scene and is still like an avid music fan, you know. And that's what I like about him. He's one of them dudes that, you know, if you know there's a show out there and you don't see him there, you almost have to wonder like, hey, I wonder where Jim's at. Yeah. You start taking attendance in your mind because you got some of these people out there that are into it and love it and it means something to them. And, you really like that. And Jim's one of them guys that's big on the music scene. And we should probably get him in here one day because I know he's been to a million concerts. I'm sure that he's got many, many interesting stories.
Yeah, get him in here.
Speaking of which, coming up here, I got so many people that I got to get on. You know, I got, Charlie Barrett. That was the harmonica player. We got to get him back on here to do harmonica lessons. My buddy JR that was with the Rainbow Tribe back in the day. Excellent drummer. He's got some great stories from the Cedars. Then I ran into another friend of mine, Brady Kelly, who was like the manager of National Record Mart. And she was in charge of all the record departments for Farmore back in the day. And she's got a million rock and roll stories. She is like number one rock and roll chick. And then, I ran into Demas Papademos, who's another like one of our local original music guys, him and his band. And those guys are just awesome. And, you know, it's like, I got so many people that I got to get on here that, I don't know how I'm going to do this all.
Fortunately, like I hired someone in studio that's going to help us secure some of our talent and our interviews and keep on it and get him scheduled.
Yeah.
I don't want this to be your ninth job, right?
You know what? You know what? If you got somebody like that, I would just like to say, listen, here's a list of people, you know, and here, tell them here's the open dates or let us know. And I'm looking because I got so many interesting people that want to come on that we might have to start having 2-3 guests on a show.
Heck yeah.
You know, and I mean, if it pans out that way, then that's the way it's going to have to be.
All right, because, well, she'll be in contact with you on that. You'll okay. Get hooked up with who you're
yes.
Looking at.
Yes. Absolutely. Okay. Yes. That will be really great. All right. You know what? This week in Youngstown history, 38 years ago this week, Idora Park burnt down. And boy, that was a sad day because people my age, and if you were growing up at that time, Idora Park really meant a lot to us back then. I mean, it was the coolest amusement park. Everything about Idora Park was just cool. And that's one of those things when you mention Idora Park, if you were growing up at that time, you have, for the most part, unless you're some kind of weirdo, you mostly have, or you drank too much at Hot Day and you were puking in Mill Creek Park or something, or you got busted or whatever. But for the most part, when you mention Idora Park to people our age, it just does nothing but bring back great, great memories. And, you know, the rides, the Wildcat, the Jackrabbit, they were two of the biggest and most popular roller coasters in the country. And when that place burnt down, a lot of people were really bummed out. That, you know, it was like we lost a friend, really. And one of the things that we liked the most about Idora Park was the music scene. And this goes back from day one. When Idora Park first opened, the first musical guest was John Philip Sousa, believe it or not. And then through the big band era, Benny Goodman and all those guys used to play there, and Guy Lombardo. And then they started getting into the rock scene. And that's when, you know, Boots Bell and the good guys from WHOT stepped in, and you had bands there like the Human Beings who just ruled Youngstown back there in 1965, 1966. And then you started getting all these other bands that would play their national acts. And then from that it evolved in a Hot Day and Spring Thing. And the one band that really just dominated Hot Day was Left End in their Dennis T. Menace, we love you, my brother. And it was really something, Hot Day. You know, they used to have, like, you know, the Bobby Shermans, the David Cassidy's, the DeFranco family, people like that, play in the ballroom for all the teeny boppers. And then out on the Midway, they would have Left End. I remember seeing Joe Walsh there and Michael Stanley and the Raspberries. Oh, you want to talk about a good show? You're standing on the Midway at Idora Park, and I don't know how old I was at the time, and there's the Raspberries there, and they were just playing all those great songs, and I love that power pop, and you know, Badfinger played there, and the list of bands, it just goes on and on. But Left End played 12 times or 11 times at Hot Day. And a while back when we had Patsy, the drummer, Patsy Palumbo, Southside guy, Wilson High School guy, you know, drummer for Left End, he come out with a book. It's called Tenacity, the Left End Story. And it's really good, especially since they mentioned me in them. Right. You know, I am mentioned, I think, twice in that book.
Nice.
So that in itself. But I mean, it gives you the whole Left End story and the crazy antics that they got into and everything. But one of the things that we talked about was, you know, Idora Park, because when you think of Idora Park, you automatically think of Boots Bell right off the bat, especially if you were in that age group, you know, which is getting older. I don't want to say that, but if you were in that age group, you know, Boots Bell and the Good Guys and Dick Thompson and Johnny Kay, but especially Boots, he was like kind of the star of the show. Right. And, you know, when you think of all the sock hops and dances and everything at Idora Park, the Boots is the first thing that comes into mind. But they had so many great bands. And then number two on the list was Left End, because I don't care who they had there, whatever the bands were, when Left End hit the stage, it was like, yeah, this is it. You know, they put all those local, national bands to shame. And so Patsy was here. We were talking a little bit about his book, and it's called Tenacity, the Left End Story. If you're a fan, you owe it to yourself to get it, because it's all about Youngstown. It's all about Left End. And if you grew up in that era, you're going to love it. But here's what, since in memory of the fire 38 years ago this week, here's a little bit of conversation with me and Patsy from Left End talking about their connection with Idora Park and some of their memorable moments.
I mean, whenever you had these big concerts, and of course there was Idora Park, WHOT Day at Idora Park, Spring Thing. We did 11 consecutive Spring Things.
You know, we got a clip from that. We're going to play that one clip here coming up in a minute, but yeah, let's talk a little bit about Spring Thing and Hot Day. How cool was that? Because they'd always have the teeny bopper band, the Bobby Sherman, David Cassidy, DeFranco family, whoever was the heartthrob of the time. But then I always thought that the real music was out on the Midway, where we had you guys and the Raspberries and Joe Walsh
and all these,
you know, I mean, people just don't realize how that was back in the day. You'd have 6, 7, 8 bands of your caliber out on the Midway. And then you had the rides, and then you had the all-star teeny bopper, whoever it might have been at the time, the heartthrob in the ballpark, and it was just so cool.
Yeah, it was. It was a big event that people looked forward to every year.
Everybody drinking Boone's Farm wine.
Exactly. And we were fortunate in that. you know, in the summertime and whatever, you had these big concerts. And of course there was,
I think, in Boone's Farm Wine.
Yeah, exactly. And we were, you know, we were fortunate. Again, we work very closely with the guys at the radio station. So Jerry Starr, Thomas John.
Oh yeah.
And all that gang, Dick Thompson, they had a place. I don't know if people know this, but underneath the old Wildcat, there was like a little house or a little building back there, small little shack type building with a couple of rooms.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's where the coolers were of the beer and everything that the WHOT guys had. Well, we had access to that. They would let us party with them. And as a matter of fact, the night before spring thing, there was always a party at Jerry Starr's house in Hubbard that we'd get invited to. And I remember being there when AC just started.
How about AC? I got to give a shout out to AC. Oh, 50 man. Years. 50 he has years. Been on. That is such an incredible accomplishment.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm a little pissed off, you know, because I got asked. I thought I was going to get AC's record, but they chopped me. But God bless them, man. I mean, people don't realize how that's almost like an impossible feat to say somebody has been constantly drawing ratings and stayed at the same radio station for 50 years. That's like mind boggling.
Again, he had that great fan base. People loved. Still love AC, you know, great guy. We did a lot of gigs with Ace back in the days and always was a friend, you know, always was really cool. And I run into him every now and then and he'll go, wow, it's good to see you. He'll like reminisce about the good old days.
Oh, yeah. And when we reminisce about the good old days, they really were the good old days. Oh, this is no bullshit. I mean, is the real deal. But let's get back to Hot Day and Idora Park and tell me a little more about that.
Well, again, you know, we did 11 straight years there until it burned down. It literally had to burn down for us to get out. But we had a great time. I think our most memorable year, which again is in the book, is when the band that went on before, our album was just coming out. Spoil Rotten was coming out. So we were like local heroes. So this band that was hardly known at all was going to go on before us in the ball field called the Eagles. And like people are like, ooh, the Eagles, some band from California. So we're in the dressing room on that day was actually in the ballroom. So we're sitting with Glenn Frey
Don Henley
and those guys, and we're drinking beers with them. And they're telling us it's their first tour. They just released a song called Witchy Woman. And they were telling us we were asking them all these, we were fascinated because they played with Linda Ronstadt. So we're like, wow, you work with Linda Ronstadt. And they're going, yeah, Linda's really cool. We're talking about them. We're like, yeah. So they went on before us and they got a nice, you know, response, but people, they came on with jeans and t-shirts and this long hair.
Yeah.
We stood in the back by the soundboard and I never forget Roy Greary going, I will not go on that stage. He said, there's no way I will follow those guys. They were just, I mean, in their first tour, it was just the five of them. And I'll tell you what, they were impeccable. I mean, they were just flawed. The harmony, no one around was doing harmonies and playing that tight and the dynamics of the music, you know, the highs. And we were just like, who are these guys? But that was probably our high point at Spring Thing, playing with the Eagles. And then when we went on after them with our glitter and our tuxedos and our flash smoke bombs going off.
Yeah.
Glenn and Don stood by the soundboard and watched our whole set. And afterwards came up to us and were going, man, you guys got to go to LA. You'll kill if you go on to Sunset Strip. They were trying to talk us into going.
Yeah.
West, because they said, man, you guys are awesome. And they thought we were great. And we're like, jeez.
Hey, that's that was really the most cool. Great memory. Here's a clip. I think you posted this one here. This is Left End at Hot Day in 1973. Let's give this a listen, and because this is one of your biggest songs too. So let's fire this one up.
Standing with an old Super 8 camera, film camera, filming this.
Look at them in the spaceman seat. And look at that crowd.
Yeah, yeah, you know, have 8,000 to 10,000 people
all the way back, and then you see the rides at Idora Park and the Lost River and the Wildcat and everything. Damn, is that,
those were the days. Yeah.
Look at Tony with like a Golda Mae spacesuit with makeup on.
Look at his platform boots and stuff.
Look at you going crazy.
Yeah.
Big fro. Who knows? I might be in that picture there somewhere.
Yeah.
Look how we looked in 73.
Right.
I still love that look.
Yeah, good old times. Dennis would get him going.
Oh. Look at everybody going nuts there. And if you're familiar with Idora Park, how that's set up, I mean, there's people jammed in there, man.
Of course, the flash pots have to go off. And
man, showmanship all the way around. Just the whole band, man. The flash, the look. Where'd you guys get some of them crazy costumes at?
Well, you know, we would have them made for us. My sister Dorothy would make me clothes. We had seamstresses or people we knew who would make us clothes. A lot of the leather things we wore later and like on the album, we would go to New York, we'd go to Greenwich Village, and you'd have all these artisans there right on the street designing things out of leather, and they'd have boots, custom made boots, and we'd buy stuff there too.
Crazy stuff, man. Crazy stuff.
Dennis was, you know, when Dennis got with the band, he set the law down that we are going to be a flashy glam group. He was into Bowie, and Bowie was like the first to start to come out with that look.
Yeah.
He said, if you guys aren't into that,
I don't want in. Yeah.
You know, you have to be into the show thing. So we had to learn how to put mascara on and eyeliner and
Were you a little reluctant, or did you see like this is where we gotta go?
You know
man.
What? We respected him so much, and he was forceful. I mean, when Dennis came in, even playing with Dennis, Dave LeMaster said it in an interview one time that when Dennis is on the stage singing, he actually controls the pulse of the group. He was that charismatic, quite frankly, and strong.
Right.
So when he did speak, it was like, he usually knows what he's talking about. There were times, again, in the book I talk about, we're like, he doesn't know what he's talking. You know, we challenge him, but it ended up he knew what to do.
Now, how did you guys stay together so long? That's another thing. I see these bands come and go. They break up. You know, this, that happens. How did you guys manage to stay together this whole time?
That's a good question, because the name of the book is Tenacity, The Left End Story. And that's really the theme of the book, the tenacity of the guys to stay together and to persist on, even when things look at their worst, you know. And that's why I think the story kind of impacts a lot of lives, because it's about our story, but anybody could empathize with it. You know, when you're facing tough times, do you stick it out? Do you keep going or do you just sort of throw in the towel? And we just hung in there. I think we were more like a family in a sense. And there are a lot of times when, you know, we wanted to give up or whatever, but there'd always be that little spark that would bring you back to it. And but again, I think the bottom line is the fan base.
Oh, there we go. Patsy Palumbo, ladies and gentlemen, from Left End. And we're reminiscing a little bit about Idora Park, which burned down 38 years ago this week. How about Dennis T. Menace, though? You know, he come off as this wild man and everything, but he really had a vision for rock and roll, and he really had a feel for what the crowd would get into. And, you know, when you think about Left End, they really captured the pulse and the feel of Youngstown, Ohio. I mean, they were Youngstown, Ohio personified, loud, gritty, in your face, pyro, the whole nine yards, man. I mean, they just defined Youngstown, Ohio. And, you know, it was kind of like that, you know, all the bands that made it big back at that era, you know, especially I really like to compare them to Ellis Cooper and the Detroit rock scene. And the Detroit rock scene was very similar. You know, you had this industrial town, gritty town, hardworking town, loud town, you know, boxing town. And that's how we wanted our bands too. You know, we didn't want a wimpy band. We didn't want any wimps, man. We wanted somebody that's going to come out there and punch you in the face, you know?
Yeah, we're fans that would show up in negative degrees with the snowing, right?
Right.
We're Cleveland Browns.
And that's what really made a difference with Left End. They really captured the feel. And I have interviewed Ellis Cooper several times about, you know, the Midwest and the rock feel and cities like Cleveland, Detroit, Youngstown, Buffalo. There's just that, you know, it wasn't the East Coast. It wasn't the West Coast. Forget about these guys in LA. Forget about these guys in New York. You want to go rock.
Right.
You go to the Midwest. You go to the Rust Belt. Well, it wasn't the Rust Belt at that time. It was really booming and really jamming.
Right.
And that's where you're going to find the real rock audiences. And that's it's been true to this day. And, you know, when you hear when Ellis talks about Detroit and the scene there and the feel and the attitude of the fans, and he, you know, even he says it just translated very easily into Youngstown. And that's why Ellis is still so popular in Youngstown. Ellis, I remember when he started, you know, when 18 came out, that had to be like 1972. And they played at Struthers Fieldhouse, and Ellis has played Youngstown in every configuration. He was a part of the Most Beautiful Picnic, which was like the first big outdoor rock concert for the Youngstown area at Lake Milton with Ted Nugent. And I think Jay Giles was there and Bob Seger. And, you know, he played at a lot of different places around Youngstown, Tomorrow Club, you know, and then you go to B&B Backstage, Covelli Center, you know, the amphitheater, you know, that kind of sound and those kind of the guitar assault is what this town was all about. And Left End personified that. They captured it and they had exactly what we were looking for at the time. And that's why they were so popular and to this day are still legendary. You know, they were the band. They were the band. The Human Beings were up there too. But I think the thing with the Human Beings was they were one step before. So, you know, now, you know, if you remember Left End though, you know, we're getting old. We're not, you know, you could talk. I tell this story all the time. They had a Left End reunion, right? And we were at the Rib Burnoff in Niles. And I was going to introduce Left End. And my daughter and her friends were there. And they were just, I think they might have still been in high school. And I was just so pumped. And I was like, hey, you got to stick around, man. I'm bringing on Left End. I'm going to be introducing Left End here in a little bit, right?
Oh, no.
And I'm all pumped up. And, you know, so I'm all pumped up. I'm all fired up. And, you know, I'm going to introduce Left End and the place is packed and everything. And I get up there and do my thing and everything. And Left End starts jamming a Bad Talking Lady or something. And then I go out to see my daughter and go, well, what'd you think? Hey, you know, we're getting the hell out of here. What the hell is this?
Wah,
you
know,
to this day, you know, so, but that's the thing. Unfortunately, you know, when you start talking about the Tomorrow Club and Idora, and Idora Park and Left End and Boots Bell and the Wizard.
We can do this all day.
And the 4 o'clock high and things of that. It's like, you know, and it kind of baffles me because now it's like, you got to be really out there. You know, I mean, you got to be old. I sit there and think about that and I'm thinking, damn, you know, where did the time fly? Hey, I see my buddy Wally Fellner's checking in. Wally's another rock and roller. Wally Fellner is like one of these guys. Hey, Justin Coffin, right. Stick around here. Jump in here for a second.
I got a couple minutes.
Okay, we'll make it real quick. Now I know you were here. Draft is off and running. You're doing the draft show. So give us some quick highlights of what happened here in the last couple hours.
We made it through the first 9 picks. Actually, the 9th pick was just happening, so I don't know who went. But
Trayvon Walker, defensive end out of Georgia, went first. Aiden Hutchinson out of Michigan went second. Derek Stingley Jr. went to the Texans. Ahmad Gardner out of Cincinnati went four. And then Thibodeau, and you got a couple offensive linemen in there. So the good thing is, I know you're a Browns guy, Carolina took an offensive tackle. I think Baker's going to Carolina.
It seems that way.
I think he's going to Carolina.
I think so, too. So, Woody, who do you think we're going to pick here? What do you think we're going with?
Until 44, so we don't have a pick in the first round, which is kind of refreshing as a Browns fan, honestly.
Yeah, because you know what? It seems like every year we're – The whole thing depends on this first round draft pick, and they put all the pressure on this guy, no matter who it is. Yep. And then if he is a bust, then it's a disappointment because we put all our eggs in that basket and we run out and buy his jersey. Even like now, you know, what are you going to do with your Baker Mayfield jersey? Now you had 3 years, 4 years, and now it's done.
Exactly.
You know, and you had all this hype and you were all built up and you were all fired up and this is the guy and we finally found him. Blah, 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 and, well, he's not our guy at all. Adios.
Exactly.
You know?
Well, the only Browns jersey I own is Jarvis Landry. And I feel like I can wear that proudly, whether he's on the team or not.
Yeah.
You know, like some guys that burn bridges that leave town. If you got an OBJ jersey,
yes.
You got a Baker jersey, if you got a Trent Richardson or
You know what? My Trent Richardson jersey is probably one of the best ones that I have. I mean, I got it somewhere at a discount, and I thought, and I mean, this one was like, as close to probably a Chinese knockoff game jersey that you could find. But then I still got to wear it,
Right.
And it's like, I got a Jeff Garcia jersey.
Oh,
I got a William Green jersey. I got a, Tim Couch. I got a Tim Couch. No Courtney Brown. I didn't go with big money,
What else? Gerard Warren. You got a Gerard Warren.
I might have a Gerard Warren. I got a Joe Jarvisius jersey sticking around, but I would say out of my collection, probably the only one that really makes sense now is the Joe Thomas jersey.
And like ones like that, you can hold on to forever.
Yeah.
You get your Bernie Kosar, you get the Legends jerseys. But the nice thing about the Browns now, and I know you probably have some Steeler fans that watch too.
Yeah.
But like guys like Roethlisberger for the Steelers or, you know, whoever, you can hold on to those jerseys for a long time.
Think about that.
You know,
if you were a Steelers fan and you bought a Roethlisberger jersey, you're done.
You wear that for 20 years.
You buy a Troy Polamalu jersey. You're done. You're set. You have a bus jersey. That's all you need. You know,
well, the good thing we can say, hopefully coming over to the Brown side, you got Denzel Ward locked up. You got Myles Garrett locked up. You got Greg Newsome locked up for a while. Nick Chubb.
Yeah.
You got a
Now,
lot
I would
of
get a Chubb jersey. That's what I've been looking at. I would get a Chubb.
Now, running backs don't have that shelf life.
Yeah.
I think you can hold on to that for at least
Peyton Hillis. How many people raise your hand that have a Peyton Hillis shirt?
He was on the cover of Madden 1 year, I think.
How did that guy? You know what, though? That's because we are so desperate. We are so desperate for a hero. We are so desperate for a hero, and he showed this little spark and a little something, and we all liked him. And next thing you know, he's gone. We all went out and bought a jersey and put him on Madden. And the next thing you know, it's like we're never having to, you know.
Well, and Baker too. We had the we thought we had the next guy, and
I know a lot of people that did not buy jerseys that thought Baker. I'm going to get a Baker jersey, but I'll tell you, one time I was down in Tampa Bay. And the last time we played Tampa down in Tampa.
Okay.
And first of all,
when Mayfield got hit.
Yeah, I think so. And the Browns fans there put the Tampa Bay tailgate party to shame. I mean, all the dudes were down there, Pumpkinhead and Macho Man and everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're doing keg bowling. And, you know, we had this whole.
You should get Macho Man on your show. Isn't he from Struthers?
Yeah, I think so.
I think he is from Struthers. You should get him down.
Yeah, yeah. And all the characters were there, right? All the characters from the Dog Pound are there. And we're doing keg bowling. And the place is just off the charts.
Oh, yeah.
And you see some of these Tampa Bay fans are sitting there drinking a little wine on a lawn chair and stuff. And then we all marched down from the, our tailgate lot down to the stadium. We all marched in together and stuff. And I was just laughing, looking at all the jerseys of people that don't play anymore. And then it hit me. It's like, that's almost like a sign that you're a true Browns fan. Oh, yeah. If you have a jersey from some guy that has nothing to do with the team.
Who's the most obscure Cleveland Brown you can think of?
Oh, the most obscure Cleveland Brown I could think of. Oh man, that's
Ben Gay. Remember that guy? Like Gay, the stuff used to rub
on. Of course, I remember Ben Gay. Yeah.
Running back. We had some.
I'm drawing a blank right now. So real quick, I know you got to go. What do you think? You know, what are you looking at for this season?
By the way, the first Buckeye comes off the board at number 10, Garrett Wilson.
All right.
Receiver,
so. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, what do you think with this whole, you know, new look Cleveland Browns and stuff? What are you feeling?
Well, whatever your opinions are on Deshaun Watson off the field, the guy is a great quarterback. I know he hasn't played in a year, but I think the Browns have an absolutely loaded roster. They have a couple holes to fill. You bring back Clowney. Hopefully you have enough money to bring back Jarvis, draft a receiver, plug a couple of holes on the defensive line. And I'll tell you what, this team should be in the playoffs and they should compete for the AFC.
We were going to be in the Super Bowl this year, by the way, right. You know, that's the thing, you know, I don't really get that fired up about the draft anymore and all this stuff. Whenever anybody asks me, no matter what, hey, what do you think of the Browns? I said, ask me in the middle of October, end of October, and then I'll tell you what I think. Exactly. That has been my thing here lately.
Am I invested on Sunday?
Exactly. You know, it doesn't matter. It's almost like, okay, it doesn't matter. I've been a Browns fan all my life, so no matter what happens, I'm going to be sitting here watching this and swearing at the TV no matter what. You know?
Good or bad.
Yeah, good or bad. Hopefully it's good. Justin Coffin, thanks for stopping by, brother. Freddie, hey, tell everybody when they can hear your podcast and where you're at.
We are Tuesdays and Thursdays, 3:30, right here on Youngstown Studio.
All right, sounds good, man. Let's go Browns, baby. Go Browns. Woof, 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 woof. All right, man. Night, man. Hey, you too. Thank you. Justin Coffin, ladies and gentlemen, check out his sports podcast here on the Youngstown Studio. All right, real quick, back to Left End. I see a lot of people are commenting about Left End. Anthony is on here. Tomorrow Club, the Park Inn, you know, and the Yankee Lake reunion. That was also, you know, we had Patsy talking about the Yankee Lake reunion and with Left End. And I think that's when Ted Nugent was the headliner and Dennis got too screwed up at that thing and kind of blew it for him. And they were really pissed at him about that. And let's see, what was the other one? Tomorrow Club, Park Inn. Now the Park Inn was the first like big Left End, one of their first big Left End reunions. And I am proud to say that I am kind of like responsible for getting Left End to come back when they did. Because when CD106 came on the air, we started playing their music heavily and everybody got back into it. And then we had the Farmer Jim Jam out at Farmer Jim's. And that was a party beyond parties. And I think they have banned rock and roll to this very day in Bezetta Township ever since that. And that was a crazy one. Yeah. Saxville opened and I think Sideshow was there. And then Dennis comes out in like a wedding gown. And he's got like a toy machine gun and he's got a couple of, belts of bullets around him. And he's wearing like fishnet stockings underneath and like a leather, G-string or something. And people were just going berserk there. That was such a fun day. And then of course, the Park Inn, they recorded the album Live, Living and Breathing. And if you have that album, you know, you hear me and Casey Malone and Jerry Starr is on there too. So, yeah, so we're, you know, it's nice. A little bit of a part of Left End history. I'm proud to say that, but boy, what a band. TJ checking in. TJ and myself will be out at bike nights and motorcycle season here coming up and that sort of thing. But I don't know. What do you think, man? Did we touch it all?
Heck yeah. That was a good one to come back to.
Yeah. So like I say, it's good to hear that we're going to be having an assistant for me to get all these guests booked. And like I say, I got a list a mile long of people that got to get on And let's see, the 20th, the weekend of the 20th, I won't be here. That Thursday before the 20th. And next Thursday might be a little shaky. Next Thursday might be a little shaky, okay, depending on how much work I get done and how fast I get it done. And then we'll be back. And then, like I say, with bike nights coming up, we're going to have to spread some stuff out a little bit, But I got too many good guests. I got too many people who want to talk and have some great stories. And I just want to keep everything going. So, we'll keep on doing it like we're doing. We're like playing it by ear, if I can make it, I make it. And, and I know you've been out on the road here and there, and it's just the way it goes. So
Can I make a quick announcement real quick?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So tomorrow we do these ghost hunts.
Okay.
And tomorrow we're doing a ghost hunt in Deerfield. There's an antique and flea market that is supposedly haunted. Kelly, the ghost Pavlik, is doing the ghost hunt with me. So this should be amazing. The MLO bros are going to be there. So this is where we're announcing it first, that we're going to be out there tomorrow. So check it out. We start at 9 o'clock streaming live.
Oh, that should be a lot of fun. And MLO guys, they're a blast, man. I love hanging out with them and partying with them. They're a good crew. I got to get on their podcast one of these days.
We'll do it. I'll hook it up.
But it's tough with my schedule, because I'm on the air every day from 3 to 7.
Maybe we'll get a Thursday and we'll get all of us together and do one podcast.
That would be fun. Okay. That would be fun.
We'll invite them in.
Okay. So Joe, thank you for all the help. And I hope everybody enjoyed the show today. We want to thank, Patsy, if you haven't got his book yet, it's called Tenacity, The Left End Story. You'll love it. And Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Blues Man Extraordinaire. If you missed that show down at the Robbins Theater, you missed a good one. Some good shows coming to the Robbins Theater. Let me run down a couple of the shows that they have coming up. They got Buddy Guy coming up. They have Todd Rundgren coming up in the summer. And it's just a great place to see a show. If you haven't been down there, every show that I have been to here recently was just awesome. They had, Don Felder, formerly of the Eagles. He did a fantastic job. The Devin Allman, Samantha Fish show was great. Ace Frehley, former guitar player from Kiss, was fantastic. Kenny Wayne Shepherd just lit it up. Buddy Guy's going to be tough. So keep that in mind. Robbins Theater in downtown Warren. Great place to see a show. And here's what's really cool. The drink prices are reasonable. The parking is free. And you could be home from the show in 15, 20 minutes, even on a weeknight. So keep that in mind. Tune in to Y103. I'll catch you tomorrow afternoon at 3. Last day for the cash grab. I think that's all I got, man. So, Joe, thanks again. Absolutely. All right, everybody. We'll check you out tomorrow afternoon at 3 on Y103. And we'll be back here in the Youngstown studio very soon.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word about us. Thank you.